Hey everybody, I'm Dave Sandell.
And I'm Caleb Gardner.
And this is the Best Album For podcast, a podcast where we talk about the best album for getting your kids into hip-hop. Caleb, have your kids gotten into hip-hop?
You know what? They actually have. Well, at least one of them has. My teenager is very into hip-hop right now in a way that makes his mom very uncomfortable. because she is not into hip-hop. Both because of the, you know, general crassness and the subject matter, but also just doesn't really get the appeal from a, you know, music standpoint. But he and I have definitely bonded over it. It's been kind of fun. I've made him some like hip hop playlists and, you know, we've talked about Kendrick. We've talked about a lot of stuff. So it's been a fun bonding experience for me because I, you know, generally like that he's into it because he's the only one in the house that I can talk to about hip hop now.
Yeah, nice.
Before I had no one. Now I've got a teenager who kind of generally thinks I'm lame, but in this subject matter, you know, we it's something to bond over.
I like it. My kids are obsessed with hip hop, rap music in general. So we had to like put parental controls on our, on our
speakers.
That's
what I was going to ask, if they're just like exploring themselves.
I think when I was a kid and sort of first getting into hip hop, some of those lyrics went over my head. And
yeah.
Maybe I just didn't spend enough time with the liner notes. I don't know. Were these, do you remember, did people print their lyrics in liner notes for rap albums?
I don't think they did for rap albums. I feel like they did for other albums.
Right. Rock albums, they did all the time.
Genres. Yeah. Even R&B, I remember having some lyrics.
When I was a kid, I felt like I had to really sit down and listen to a song over and over again to understand what they're saying. So a lot of the stuff that I would find questionable just went over my head. But
same.
When they throw it on the stereo, my TV comes on and shows them all the lyrics. So even with the parental controls on and even allowing for a lot of the cuss words or most vulgar stuff is, you know, either bleeped out or there's an alternative version, I still find myself occasionally having to turn something off because I'm like, whoa, this subject matter, you are not old enough. And I don't know what the age where they are old enough is. Like, I was finding this stuff on my own, not with my parents. Would I be okay with it if they were finding it on their own? I didn't know about it. I'm not totally sure. They feel a little young. They're not teenagers.
Yeah, I'm of two minds about this. Because on the one hand, I think it opens up really important conversations, you know, to be able to, like, talk about the history of oppression of Black people in the country or, like, what people in poverty experience or people who are drug users or drug, you know, dealers. Like, those are important things they need to know exist in the world and that in some extent can open up conversations about that. But there's also just some like blatant misogyny and, you know, things where it's, you're not really going deep on those topics. You're just talking about, I don't really care for like having to kind of give disclaimers. I like important conversations. I don't like having to give disclaimers about don't look at women this way. You know what I mean? Right, it's just, that's very different than like historical context of oppression. So I think it's tough because it's really hard to pull those things apart. And a lot of artists and music, I also just think there's hearing what they say and there's actually understanding them. You know, even if you have the lyrics up and you're watching what they're saying and maybe, you know, bleeping out the curse words or even not. I mean, I generally now my kids are old enough that I generally don't because I just feel like I'd rather them think it's not a big deal than try to make it a bigger deal than it needs to be. You know what I mean? But again, my kids are a little bit older and not likely to repeat these words at preschool. So very different than people with younger kids. But even if you did take in what they're saying, see the lyrics, there's so much nuance in the language and so much cultural significance in specific word usage that often, even when I was young and listening to this music and hearing what they were saying, I didn't know what they were talking about, you know? So it's very different than understanding the language and actually understanding.
So I find that, so my boys are in fourth grade, and I find that they come to me with a lot of questions about what does that mean? What does that mean? And
right.
I would say half the time I'm just very honest with them and we have a really good conversation. And then half the time I present something like, hey, let's talk about that when you're older.
Yeah.
Let's not get into that today. And then I try to remove that song from playlists.
Can you give us an example? Are they like, is prostitution sex work?
what are they
asking about?
So today they had a Kendrick song on, the Kendrick song Lust. And they said, what does it mean to put it in a little bit? I was like, what? Let's turn this off.
Excellent.
Immediately.
That was everything I hoped it would be.
Sorry, everybody. So, my kids, I made a point to get them into hip hop. I wanted to expose them to a wide range of music.
Yeah.
And hip hop was really important to me and is really important to me. I don't know why I keep calling hip hop. Rap is really important to me. And I wanted them to have a proper introduction, like experience it through somebody who can kind of help them work through the nuance of all of it rather than just
that makes
finding
sense.
It for themselves. But I sometimes wonder if I went off the deep end a little early, but we're going to get into what the right path is. Like what I think I have landed on here's the right order for introducing all these different artists and all kind of like spirals around one artist that we'll get into in a little bit. But how have you thought about what rappers you're going to first expose your kids to? What's the foundation you wanted to lay?
Like what bands in general and then specifically what rappers?
I think I'm asking, when I'm saying bands, I'm talking about, Wu-Tang, Tribe Called Quest, Public Enemy. So I meant within
this genre. Yeah, that makes more sense. I don't know that I've given it a lot of sophisticated thought, but I think in the times when I've tried to be intentional about it, I've tried to think through what's the experience of the music? Are we listening to it as a group in a group setting? Are we dancing to it? Are we, you know what I mean? What's the experience around the music, not just the music itself? And does that give you an opportunity to like understand why people enjoy it, understand kind of the, why you like a good beat, for example, versus just listening to the lyrics? And then if opportunities to hear the lyrics and ask questions, thoughtful questions about the lyrics come up, then we can talk about it. But kind of prioritizing that part first. And then beyond that, it's been hard because my wife doesn't really enjoy it. And so it's not like something I can put on in the car. Do you know what I mean? And then we can all just be listening to it together. But also, I don't know that I would reach for that for all the reasons we were just talking about like, where are you going to reach for good hip hop that doesn't have all these themes that I don't necessarily want to expose to my kids to? So I think that when I have done it with some intentionality, it's been like around the house for fun kind of party atmosphere that we're enjoying together. Like on New Year's Eve, for example, we put on like a 2000s hip hop playlist and it was super fun, listening to Nelly again and dancing around with neon lights. That was super fun. So I think those have been the atmospheres that I've put it in. And then it's fun. It's funny because my son, who I was just talking about, that really likes it, kind of found it on his own. And I think it was through probably friend groups or through media or whatever. And then all of a sudden, he's like calling out Kendrick songs he knows and loves. And I'm like, what? It was a surprise to me. So I don't know. Maybe our kids are going to, because it's so, so ingrained in culture. Like maybe they're going to find their own ways into it anyway. And like you said, if we can find ways that are a little bit more intentional for them and help deconstruct some of those scenes, it's going to be better. I don't know. I don't know that I have any good answers.
Yeah. That's fair. I think that I just wanted to listen to this music with them. I like this music a lot. And so I wanted to enjoy it. And, I was kind of sharing a lot of things, but they just really glommed on to rap music. And now if I try to put on Radiohead in the car, they're like, Daddy, can we listen to, Jay-Z instead? I'm like, I guess. Let's listen to Jay-Z again. And so I think that the tipping point for me was discovering, we've talked about this before. I don't know what the process is for Spotify, but on Apple Music, for many albums, if you scroll down to the bottom of the album, there are alternate versions. And there are clean versions for a lot of these albums. And especially like the greatest hits compilations, there's often some kind of clean version or like stuff that landed on soundtracks at some point or another has a clean version.
Yeah.
So I've sort of built this rap masterclass playlist for them. And I would say that we're being a little more systematized about it. Like I am introducing different groups at different times and I'm trying to expose them to a wide variety of sounds. And I think part of me is trying to inoculate them from the fact that I don't think rap music is very good anymore. Like I think that modern rap music is kind of lame and kind of trash. And I don't understand that the appeal. Like it seems like the songs that pop, there's a lot of mumbling. Everything kind of sounds the same generally to me. Mm. Even like underground rap doesn't sound that interesting to me compared to what underground rap sounded like even 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm getting older and more stubborn, but I feel like this is a theme I hear about in, kind of the critical landscape. Although those people are also dudes in their 40s writing about music. So maybe yeah, all of us are just not sure how to engage with this new music. However, I've sincerely tried to, and I find it very unlistenable. So I just want them to like, I don't want them to reach for Lil Baby, even though Lil Baby's fine. Like, he's fine. I just would rather them reach for something a little more interesting. And so we kind of started with one album, and then we kind of moved both forwards and backwards in time. So once I kind of situated them in one album, then we moved into, let's go listen to the stuff that inspired these guys, and then let's listen to the stuff that came out of it. And then once we listened to those things, now I said, okay, well, now let's branch off and see what other things were coming out at the same time and how they were in conversation with each other. And we got into this whole, you know, New York, East Coast, West Coast thing. And I kind of brought them through the history of rap music. There's this book we're actually reading together right now called Can't Stop, Won't Stop. And there is a young adult's version of that book that's about the history of rap. And it's been really fun. It's been fun to read, although so much of it is centered around gangs, and they didn't really know what a gang was. And I've had a hard time defining for them what a gang is, and why gangs pop up, and what their value is to society, but also what their detriment is to society. And you know, there's been some good conversations about that lately. But mostly we just have to talk about like, hey, let's not think about women this way. Like, there's so much misogyny on all of this stuff.
Yeah, that is probably the most depressing theme to me about the things that I'm nervous about them hearing. Mm-hmm. How do you think about, because I know you're still listening to clean versions, obviously. You said your kids are, I think, in, would you say, fourth grade?
Yeah.
Do you think about eventually kind of just expose it? Like, how do you think about the kind of transition to just listening to the like real thing? Because I think I had a friend that was pretty influential for me about this a few years back, basically saying like, I'd rather take the power away where it doesn't feel like something that is like hidden or scary or secret in a way that like, you know, where kids like want to rebel and then they like go toward the thing you're trying to keep them from. Like, I'd rather just listen to it with your parents and kind of make it lame and therefore not all that like powerful, you know?
That's interesting. I think, you know, every kid is different and every family is different. My kids are very impressionable and they will repeat everything that they hear, especially if it's shocking. We've had runs where they cuss a lot. And so sometimes we've been listening to rap music where I wasn't reaching for clean versions. We were just kind of playing whatever. And we have a conversation about like, hey, there's going to be some words in this song that I don't really want you guys to use at school or church. There's times and places, but it's turned out that they just have a really hard time reining that in. And so I've essentially gone back and forth a little bit. If I notice that they are cussing more, I essentially take all of it away again. so much like as punishment, but just as like, hey, let's not expose them to more ideas and more people using this language. And then as I notice that they're maturing a little bit and not repeating everything that they hear, then I feel comfortable bringing it all back in. We've had to have lots of conversations around the N-word and what that means. It's basically impossible to listen to rap music and not constantly hear the N-word. And my sons are Black, and so we've had that conversation on multiple levels. But certainly one of them is like, when is this word appropriate? When is it not appropriate? For me, it's never appropriate. When will it be appropriate for you? And we've had lots of really good, thoughtful conversations about all of that with them. But I feel like we've done an okay job. Like, I feel pretty proud of the job we've done talking through that stuff. But I sometimes wonder, like, should I just wait it? Should I just not expose them to this music until closer to high school? But that felt weird. I felt like they were going to find it on their own at some point.
Yeah, so that's probably fair.
How have you gone about talking about things like the N-word or the misogyny in the songs?
I mean, I don't know that I've done it with the intentionality that you have. I definitely haven't gone through the canon like you are.
Sure.
That was a very Dave answer to exposing your kids to hip hop. So I don't know that I honestly don't think they've listened to, but with the exception of my teenage son, I don't think that the other two have really listened to hip hop enough to engage in those conversations yet. Yep. So yeah, I think we're still going to be figuring it out in the next few years.
Fair enough. Well, should we get into it?
Yeah, definitely.
Why don't I kick us off? For me, when I was thinking about the album I first wanted to play for my kids, I wanted to reach for something that had a minimal amount of offensive material. So a minimal amount of cussing, minimal amount of vulgarity, minimal amount of misogyny, not too many N-words. Violence to a minimum. Albums that I can play for them without having to constantly reach for the mute button or constantly have to have conversations.
Right.
Because we started listening to this stuff years ago. It wasn't like in fourth grade. We started listening to this stuff years ago. And it was also really important to me that they wanted to rap along to the songs. And so I wanted to pick something that they could reasonably memorize and be able to rap along to, because I think that's the most fun part of rap music for me, is like starting to learn the lyrics and rapping along in your car. And I wanted the beats to sound cool. I didn't want them to sound corny. And then I didn't want to sound like, it was okay if they sounded a little dated, you know, compared to like modern rap music, but I didn't want to start all the way at the beginning. And honestly, some of the stuff at the beginning of rap, you know, I think about like Curtis Blow or Sugar Hill Gang, it's a little corny, you know, like I just wasn't, 100%. I didn't want to start there.
Yeah. I thought the same thing about Fresh Prince, DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Yes.
You know, like, it feels both like very accessible for kids, but also like extremely dated.
Yeah. A little corny. And so I went with the absolute classic, Tribe Called Quest's Low End Theory. This album is super important to me because somehow, randomly, I think I talked about this on our Becoming Musically Sentient episode, but there was this weird moment in time where I hadn't heard like Nirvana yet. I hadn't heard some of that other stuff yet, but I was graduating out of sort of the 80s and early 90s things kids listen to. So, you know, I had all my Bon Jovi tapes and my Weird Al tapes and my Bengals tapes. And I also had a bunch of singles, like singles from Vanilla Ice and Sir Mix-a-Lot and, you know, MC Hammer. Maybe Sir Mix-a-Lot was later, actually, but, you know, MC Hammer. And I was watching MTV one day and the video for Scenario came on and I was completely hooked. I was so enthralled with this music and I thought, you know, I just want to listen to it more. And so it was the first album I can remember buying with my own money. And
it was, interesting.
You know, in 1991, right? That's Low End Theory. And so sometime in 1991, I went to some store and bought Low End Theory, September 91, and listened to it like crazy. And then later was exposed to Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And then it was all, you know, all rock all the time for a little while. But as a result, I've been listening to Low End Theory for what, 30 some years now. And I have a deep relationship with this record. Really love Tribe. And so I thought, am I picking this record to start them off because it's what started me off and because it kind of created my love affair? But I think it actually exists in its own right as a good album to begin with. It's socially conscious, but it's really funny. Five Dog is a hilarious rapper. I mean, they're both really funny, but Five Dog especially is very funny. And so you'll be able to like pick up on what they're saying. There's a lot of references to pop culture in the late 80s, early 90s that my sons are never going to understand. So I've sort of decided whether or not I'm going to fill them in on what they're actually talking about. We do sometimes, sometimes we don't. I sort of decided that, as is a tangent, if the thing that they're pointing to is an interesting part of pop culture history, then yes, we'll talk about it. And if it's not, I'm like, okay, whatever. But we actually went through, we memorized line by line the opening song, which is called Excursions.
Back in the days when I was a teenager, before I had status and before I had a pager, you can find the abstract. Listening to hip hop, my pops used to say it reminded him of bebop.
And Excursions is just Q-Tip rapping. Five Dog doesn't appear in it. It's pretty laid back. It's got a cool beat. He is rapping slow enough that they can hear him and understand him, but not so slow that it's, you know, kind of lame. And so they were actually proud of themselves as they started picking up on the lyrics. And I have found that we now have lots of times where they throw on Excursions and we all stop whatever we're doing and just rap along to it. And it's the most bonded fun that I've ever felt to them. I love rapping along to Excursions with them. You know, if I hear Back in the Day When I Was a Teenager, Before I Had Status and Before I Had a Pager, coming from any corner of my house, I drop everything and join in whatever they're doing. And it's funny because as we were slowly memorizing that song, they were sort of bringing in their own lyrics that they were writing and bringing in other rap songs they had heard and kind of conflating them. So once they ran out of Tribe lyrics, they had like kind of make up their own stuff, which was super lame, but really endearing. It was super fun. So I want to talk more about this, but just to kick us off, what's your relationship with Tribe Called Quest and Low End Theory in particular?
So it's interesting. I actually didn't come to a Tribe Called Quest and Low End Theory until college. So I think I've talked about my relationship with hip hop before as being basically introduced in the kind of Biggie Tupac era, right? Being very kind of influenced by that mid 90s East Coast, West Coast hip hop, and really didn't come back around to the kind of late 80s, early 90s Tribe Called Quest, you know, De La Soul, kind of all the like original underground rap that was super influential until college. And then kind of went back through it a little bit more systematically. But I think because of that, I don't have as much of a like foundational relationship with them as you do, like where you are kind of, like you said, 30 years going on with a low end theory. I think it was, for me, it was a little bit more like I missed an entire genre of hip hop that I've got to go kind of catch back up.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I should take you through a masterclass.
I would love that. Yeah. And you do that for me every day, Dave. But I really love this album. This is probably my favorite Tribe Called Quest album, although Midnight Marauders is also very good. So I don't know. It's hard, but
it's just a little more misogyny or a little more talking about women in a way that is.
Yeah.
Or at least sex. Maybe not women, but at least sex in a way that's like, yeah, you guys, not yet.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Now
we're both very good albums.
Yes.
Amazing. Both very good albums.
I maybe even slightly prefer Midnight Marauders, if I'm honest. Like, I think that the songs are more interesting.
I thought about that too.
You know, this whole record is very jazzy. You know, it's famously
sure.
almost entirely samples of jazz music and maybe some blues music, a little bit of rock music. And if you listen to their first album, People's Instinctive Paths and the, sorry, People's Instinctive Rhythms and the, damn it, People's Instinctive Travels and the Paths of Rhythm, that album is much more, here are the obvious samples. You know, there's lots of jazz in that one too. You know, that first record, which is also fantastic, I think it's just a little more obvious on the surface, although it's really fun. And that album features much less Fife Dog. Fife Dog becomes much more prominent on Low End Theory. And so I think that Low End Theory is the right one to start with. Anyway, so it's got all these jazz flourishes or jazz samples that makes it feel really cool. It's also a really nice record if you want to get into jazz music. Like, it's got this sort of bebop undertone that's really smooth and really easy to listen to, but it's really fun. Ali Shaheed Muhammad is an amazing producer, and you know, everything that he created for them, like, you could just listen to it as a beats record and it would be fun to listen to as well. And I would say that throughout the 90s, maybe even to the 2000s, I was not engaging with this stuff lyrically very much. Like, I was mostly there for the beats.
Yeah.
So, and to that end, there's a song like Scenario at the end, of course, which is their super famous kind of party track, you know, all the different rappers from the Native Tongues Collective, including Busta Rhymes, kind of making his debut. It's a really fun track, and everybody gets to just shoot off some really fun lyrics, and they're just little snippets, and it feels like everybody's having a good time.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like this is the joy of rap music and how it brought a community together, kind of all in one little package. And so we listen to that together a lot too. There's a lot of great tracks on this record.
Would you say that Scenario is the most probably widely recognized song from this album?
From this album, yes.
Yeah.
Maybe not from Tribe Called Quest, but certainly from this album.
Yeah.
You might look to Can I Kick It or Benita Applebum maybe as their most.
What would you suggest as an entry point for most people? It sounds like you've just started with Excursions with your kids. What would you?
Yeah, I would probably start with Excursions and just let it ride into Buggin' Out, because Buggin' Out kind of introduces you to Fife Dog. I drink a lot of soda, so they call me Dr. Pepper. There's some really fun lyrics
that
introduce you to Fife Dog.
I float like gravity, never had a cavity, got more rhymes than the one that's got family. No need to sweat Arsenio to gain some type of fame, no shame in my game.
So Excursions is a great song. It's socially conscious. It's talking about their experience making music and being in this industry and what it means to be a young man who's Black, all these things. But it's also fun. It's not just a heavy song. It's a really fun song. And then it moves to Buggin' Out. And then Rap Promoters, where things start to get really socially conscious, and that kind of continues on. There's a song on this record called Infamous Date Rape.
Listen to the rhyme, it's a black ink fat. Percentile rate, a date rape is fat. This is all.
I was just about to ask you about that. What do you do when that comes
so, up? So for a while, we just didn't listen to that track, but they've heard it at this point. And that song is pretty incredible. Like, it's acknowledging what date rape is and calling people out for ways that they treat women and this culture on what's okay and what's not okay back then. And it was a fairly forward-looking song. I think that it is far more aware of this toxic culture we're creating around women. It's a really bad thing. And so, you know, if your kids are old enough for it, then heck yeah, it's a great song. You should start, you know, not start there, but you should certainly let them listen to it and have a conversation afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't need to introduce them to Infamous Date Rape when they were first graders. So we've kind of moved through that a little bit as we started to have the talk and, you know, continued to have the talk. But that is that's actually a really cool song. It's dark and everybody's lyrics are really thoughtful and they're telling jokes sometimes because they always tell jokes, but they're really thoughtful. And so it's a really good song. Although it's one of those songs where I wonder what my parents thought when they just looked at the back of the album.
Right.
I'm still completely unsure of how much my parents were engaging with the music I was listening to as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be said that my parents were decidedly anti-hip hop. I don't think they really enjoyed me listening to any hip hop back in the day, but just kind of let me do my own thing. Didn't mean they had to enjoy it, but they didn't really police what I was listening to that much. Yep. Maybe, honestly, maybe they should have more because I was listening to like Biggie and I was like 14 and they didn't really care. I don't know. I guess I'm letting my son do the same thing now that I think of it.
Well, why don't we talk about your record? And then I want to kind of come back and talk about a proposal for a map to give people on how to maybe walk through kind of a history of rap with their kids if they're interested in that.
Yeah, I do want to circle back and tell you about a story about, because you were talking about the liner notes and the lyrics, and I remember trying to decipher hip-hop lyrics being like a game that me and my friends used to play.
Oh,
and
that's fun.
Nothing drove us more insane than the song The Crossroads by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's gonna go.
You remember this? It was a huge song in that year, and their lyrics and their enunciation of what they are saying is basically nonsense. I mean, you cannot understand anything that they are saying, and we would debate for hours about what are they actually talking about.
It's like if Boyz II Men was just like eating while they were recording.
I mean, it legitimately, it was just like, I mean, it was like, what?
Well, I mean, half of what they were saying was syllables, right? They weren't words. Is that true? Am I remembering that correctly?
I remember going back to listen to, like, basically once the internet became a thing, we could actually look up lyrics and being like, that's what they were saying? Are you kidding? It was just, you know, anyway.
Oh, man. Thank the Lord for genius.com.
Yeah, right?
Quite the treasure trove.
It's just another one of those things that our kids just never will understand. Yes. And you couldn't just find the lyrics to something, you know?
Absolutely.
Anyway. All right. So we're talking about my album.
Let's do it.
So I chose the 2000s album Quality Control by the group Jurassic 5. Yeah. Hey, you're my quality control. Captivates your party patrol. You're my body and soul. Bubble the bell tolls like the rhythm. Do you have a relationship with Jurassic 5 at all? Do you know this group?
Sure. I mean, we might fight a little bit in this episode, which will be fun. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was really into them, especially that first record with the Concrete Schoolyard and some of the other stuff.
So I listened to this album a lot when it came out in 2000 and driven a lot by the single Quality Control and a few other Great Expectations I loved. You know, I was driving around listening to this quite a bit. The past, they brought the present, because the future is near. Anticipation, magnify my motivation. Direct my energy to touch nations. Been entertaining, since niggas was really banging. Dancing at the... It hasn't really stuck around for me since then. But, you know, Jurassic 5 is just so obviously a, like, descendant of Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul in everything from their style to their lyricism to... It almost felt like they were a little bit of a reaction against late 90s hip-hop and where it had gone, and they wanted to bring it back to that old-school influence.
To that end, they were... I think at one point they were charting on modern rock radio. Like, maybe they were finding inroads into alternative music more than they were finding inroads into mainstream rap.
Yeah, I mean, they were basically like an alternative rap group based on what was popular in those days, which I think, honestly, I don't know that I made this mental connection, but that might have been one of the reasons why I went back to A Tribe Called Quest and some of that like early hip hop, because when I found Jurassic 5, it was just so obviously influenced by that I wanted to kind of go back to the source. But, you know, one of the reasons why I thought about it for today's topic is not only because it's, you know, somewhat to our point about like wanting to expose them to themes but not wanting to overdo it, it has not a lot of cursing. There's a little bit, not a lot of the N-word, just a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those where it's like you kind of step into it. It's also very accessible if you don't know any other hip hop. I found a list from Paste Magazine that said it was on the top 10 hip hop albums for people who don't like hip hop. So it is almost like designed to That's be an funny. Entry point into hip hop.
Sure.
I think because some of the song lyrics are much more accessible, understandable. Some of the themes are pretty uplifting compared to some other hip hop. So I think that this is why it came top of mind for me. And some of it's just fun. Like, I put on Quality Control in the car and was like rapping along to it. I say me because no one wanted to rap along with me and everyone was annoyed, but it was still very fun to, you know, do that in the car with my kids and felt like something that they could enjoy. Anyway, you wanted to fight me on this. What were your thoughts on it?
So my problem with Jurassic 5 is simply that they were obviously living in that template that Tribe started.
For sure.
And you know, I feel like their rappers are, I don't know their names anymore, but the people who comprise that group, their style reminds me a lot more of like Sugar Hill Gang than it does of anything that is
that's interesting.
Interesting to me now. So it felt a little bit like these beats are kind of fun. This rapping is kind of fun. I mean, you know, they had something to say sometimes, but you know, they
sometimes
I just felt like their flow wasn't all that innovative or interesting. And because they were aping stuff that had come before them, I just wanted them to actually transcend that a little bit. I wanted them to bring their own thing to it. And I felt like this music would have sounded really good in the early 90s, but it came out in 2000. And so I just felt like, even at the time, this felt like rap music for white people. Like, it didn't feel like
that's interesting.
They were making any attempt to be extraordinary. Like, I feel like there's a lot of bad rappers who still are grasping at greatness. And Jurassic 5, there's some other bands I might accuse of this, like Black Eyed Peas. Jurassic 5 just felt like they were not grasping at anything other than, I don't know, retreading the past.
I mean, I'm not, that might actually be true, but I want to ask you, if we're literally talking about introducing my white kids to hip hop, is hip hop for white people not what we are going for?
fair point.
I mean, I kind of relate it back to what Blink-182 was to punk music for me.
Okay, where it interesting. Was like,
where it's my a good friend of mine in high school called Blink-182 like baby's first punk band.
Yes, you know, 100%.
If we're looking for an entry point, we're not looking for, like, you know, the entree or the like sophisticated taste. We're looking for just, can you actually, you know,
yeah.
You know what? When I first started liking wine, Dave, I drank a lot of Rieslings. They're very sweet. They're very, you know, there wasn't a lot of depth to them, but I did thought all other wine tasted terrible. And then eventually I thought Rieslings are way too sweet and I liked, you know, red wine or something with a little bit more body. And maybe that's what Jurassic 5 needs to be for people who just need an entry point into hip hop.
So let's hang out in that analogy for a minute.
All right.
Would you say that the thing that moved you into better wines was you really liked Rieslings and so you wanted to find out what else was out there? Or was it there were other things out there that you got exposed to later and you're like, oh gosh, Rieslings were not very good? Do you know what I'm asking? Yeah. Do you hear the difference between those two things?
I think so. I mean, it was a process, right? Like, it's, you find this thing that you like and then you drink that for a little while and then you discover, oh, actually, I do like wine that's a little drier. And then you drink that and you're like, oh, actually, I do like red wine. And then you start drinking that and you're like, oh, I actually like these kind of red wines. And then you look back and by the time you got to that point, you're like, oh, I don't even like the wine that I started with anymore. I feel like there's so many things in life with that, right? Like, coffee was like that for me. There's, I mean, so I guess that's kind of why I went this direction where it was like, maybe we just need to keep the cookies on a low shelf for someone who doesn't like any hip hop. You know what I mean?
That's totally fair. I might just say like Beastie Boys might be a better entry point at that moment.
Yeah, maybe that's fair.
The way I think about Jurassic 5, maybe my problem with this is that I don't necessarily know what would get somebody from Jurassic 5 to like Mobb Deep. Like, I don't know what would get somebody from Jurassic 5 to, you know, let's go a little bit later, Tyler, the Creator. You know, I think that there's nothing about Jurassic 5 that would make me think I want to find out more.
Yeah.
It feels like it would just leave me there. I kind of related to when I first started drinking bourbon, my friends who were introducing it to me, were introducing me to Four Roses and Buffalo Trace, you know, whatever else, Blanton's, the things that were, they were fine. They were pretty good, especially for like an entry level bourbon. They made you want to continue going down that path. Yeah. But I think, you know, people who drank Jack Daniels and Jim Beam in college, like, why would you ever want to go on to find better bourbons down the road? And so,
interesting.
I just don't know if it's a good entry point because I don't know what makes you want to keep going. Although, all that said, I like Jurassic 5. They're fun. They feel kind of like the soundtrack to like an NBA Jam type of game.
Yeah.
In a really good way.
Let's take it back to the concrete streets. Original beats with real live MCs. Playground tactics, the rabbit in a hat trick. Just that classic.
I think they literally have been featured in several video games. So that actually is a very good analogy. So your point is that you want someone to be able to have a path toward being an alcoholic. That's what I heard. Is you want someone to be able to start with something simple and then just not be able to quit.
I think that is not the point I'm making. I think we can all drink responsibly. Not all. I think that many people can drink responsibly and are not tempted towards addiction. And I think some people do struggle with addiction and therefore shouldn't be on this path. I have 2 ounces of bourbon every 3 weeks. So I feel okay using bourbon in this analogy. So I wanted to just kind of play out with you for a second. I think I want to build a rap hall of fame with you. What is the 5 to 10 albums you really want your kids to love? It's important to you that they love them at some point in their lives. It doesn't have to be right away. I think as I've been thinking about what to expose my kids to, we kind of went in this weird order where we started with Tribe and then we went forward into Jay-Z and also backwards all the way back to Sugar Hill Gang, Curtis Blow, and Afrika Bambaataa. And then we kind of went forward from the past. So we went through Run DMC and then into Slick Rick, Pete Rock, Eric B. and Rakim, The Far Side a little bit. And then I sort of did this branching out of kind of corny music like MC Hammer, Vanilla Ice, Crisscross. And also, this sounds dated, but it's awesome, super important, NWA, Public Enemy.
Yeah.
And then we simultaneously was also introducing the stuff from the 90s. So we were listening to, as best I could find, cleanest versions of Outkast and Notorious B.I.G. and Snoop and Dr. Dre and Wu-Tang Clan. And then kind of moving them forward through the rest of time as well. So, you know, we went from there into Ludacris and Eclipse and Nelly and some of those. Never really did do Eminem, still holding off on Eminem as much as I can. And then finally, now I'm letting them listen to a lot more modern stuff. Drake, Kendrick, Kid Cudi, things like that. There's some of the stuff I just can't, like Run the Jewels. I love them so much, but their lyrics are so intense.
I know.
And there's just no way. And then also we're getting to the really good stuff now, because I feel like they have the capacity to hear Nas and they have the capacity to hear De La Soul, although they really hate the sketches and the skits in De La Soul. Okay. So I've been trying to figure out what's your palette for the really good stuff that I want to make sure they love. So I wanted to kind of build with you, what are the most important, you know, either albums or artists, maybe just writ large artists that you really want your kids to love by the time that they are fully grown people down the road?
Yeah. Assuming that they have good taste in music. And
well, that's always the hope.
I'm not fully ashamed of their music taste by that point.
I feel like you have 3 shots at it. one of them's going to get it right.
That's funny. I mean, you definitely have to go back and look at the 90s hip hop artists that I think we both love, like Biggie, Tupac, even early Jay-Z. And then all the stuff we Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, going way back to that. I would probably, just looking at I said start to finish. I know there's hip hop before this, but to me, Tribe Called Quest basically starts hip hop around that time. You know, obviously you've got other 80s kind of things. But to me, if you're thinking back to, you know, earliest thing I would want them to love to maybe latest, it would probably go Low In Theory, Tribe Called Quest, to kind of Biggie, Tupac, to Jay-Z, Black Album or The Blueprint, to Kendrick, and I'm sure there's things in between that I'm missing, but if they started to love Damn or To Pimp a Butterfly, I'm not going to be upset about it. I'm trying to think of things in between. To your point about hip-hop right now, there's just, again, I feel like I'm back in a little bit of a singles genre mood where occasionally there'll be a particular track that's a real banger that I really like, but I don't know there's a lot of artists right now capturing my attention. So, yeah. So I think it's, for me, probably the artist right now that are still working that I most want them to also love is probably Kendrick. Mm-hmm. But if they can pick up some of that hip hop history, like sprinkled in along the way, I'd be excited about it.
Right on. So obviously we've talked about Outkast is very important to me. I might name Outkast as my favorite rapper.
Really?
I think so. I'd have to, that could change tomorrow, but at gunpoint today, so he's like, tell me your favorite now or else, I'd probably go with Outkast. And I find it obviously that the best artists have more than one album that matters.
Yeah.
But their albums, they have such a progression through them that it's been hard for me to really even know how to help my kids get into Outkast. And they both really like Outkast now. So this is all worked out for the best. But, you know, if I look at Atliens or ATLians, I've never been sure how you pronounce that because I've only seen it written, never talked about. You know, if I look at the Aquemini and Into Stinkonia and Into Speakerbox Love Below, like those albums build on each other so much and their style even changes and shifts a little bit between them. I think Aquemini is their most accomplished record. I think that front to back, it's their best record. But Stinkonia is the one that matters the most to me just because of when I heard it. And I think it's so cool. But also, probably not as there's a lot of stuff on there that I might not want them to listen to today.
One really fun moment I remember from high school was we were doing this talent contest. It was like an all school, you know, auditorium. We're all like watching this talent and this guy gets up and he's doing these like, what are those? I don't want to call it twirling. That's something like a gymnast does, but with rifles, you know, he was in ROTC.
Oh yeah. I know what you're talking
about. And he was doing one of those twirling around, but he played the song Miss Jackson, and that's what he was twirling to. And all of a sudden, the entire auditorium erupted at this song playing because everyone loves that song.
Yeah.
And did not care what he did. He ended up dropping it a couple. Nobody was watching him at all. Everyone in the audience was just like banging to this song and like loving it and singing along with it. And all the teachers are getting upset because everyone's getting so rowdy, but like, and the entire high school just erupted listening to that song. It was so much fun.
Yeah. That's so fun. That feels like straight out of a movie. That stuff happens in real life. That's amazing. You know, I think I'd look at, I'd probably start a little earlier than you. I think It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold This Back is an important album to be introduced to, especially if you're thinking about socially where rap has fit in. I might point to that as maybe the most important album to spend some time with, although I also don't know how listenable I find it. It's not pleasurable the way that some of these other albums are. We talked about The Blueprint. That's my favorite Jay-Z. There's a bunch of other great Jay-Z records, Reasonable Doubt and Hard Knock Life. I really love Into the Wu-Tang. I think that if I was going to memorize one album just to play on the road trip or something, that might be the one because it's so fun. And they finally found their way into it a few weeks ago. And I was so happy.
That's fun.
Ready to Die by Notorious B.I.G. I think is a masterpiece. I love Good Kid, Mad City the most out of all the Kendrick stuff. I think, like you, he's my favorite working rapper. The one who I'm most excited about. Although Tyler, the Creator stuff has been really good. And just rounding out the list, Mad Villainy. I love MF Doom. I could listen to MF Doom all day. He's so funny. He's so clever. He's got such a cool flow. And that record is really cool. The beats on it are really fun. And then I feel this pull towards Kanye. I will never be able to quit him. I think that if I was going to lay out my 10 records that I think are masterpieces, you know, he made like 5 of them.
Man, that definitely requires some
what
context.
What do you do with it? You know,
kids.
And they have a lot of opinions about Kanye, you know, we've talked about him a lot. And so they think it's weird that I still listen to him because I'm the one that told them all the bad stuff too.
Yeah.
But you know, Yeezus and My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and,
oh my God,
College Dropout. Those are stone cold classics. His flow is weird sometimes. His lyrical content is stupid.
Yes,
more often than it's not to me, but also they're amazing. And so I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, I hear that. I really feel that. Man, I want to be clear. Like, there are plenty of artists that I love that are making music. I mean, you mentioned Tyler, the Creator. Made me think of like Vince Staples.
And oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, there's plenty of working hip hop artists right now that I love. It's just that I don't know how many albums they've made that I love.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Right?
Yeah.
They make plenty of music that I love. I just can very rarely get into a kind of an entire album of theirs. My judgment about the genre, and somebody again, reach out to me and correct me if I'm wrong, show me artists that we haven't thought of, but is that it has become so focused on the kind of beats. And maybe that's part of the TikTokification of it and the like trying to get replayed on that platform. But it's so focused on trying to get the hook and the beats. And to some extent, it always was, right?
Sure.
But you used to be able to mix that with great storytelling and social commentary and all the things that we loved about how that genre used to kind of ground you in reality, even as much as it made you dance or it made you like want to play it really loudly in the car. And now it feels like the lyrics for a lot of the working artists, not all of them, a lot of the most popular working artists are either like just saying absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like I think about Drake and some of his songs. I'm like, what is this song even about? It's about nothing. Or I saw, you see, there was an interview recently with
Mos Def.
Not Mos Def. Yes, you saw this interview. Yes, and he called it, what did he call it? He called it, called Drake's music something you play in the mall or something like
something
that.
Yes, Target.
Yes, Target. That's what it was. Something that you play in Target. So it's like half of it is that, and half of it is you've taken the misogyny or drug dealing or all of that to its logical conclusion, where it's now you're just talking about making money and sleeping around. And again, there's no real substance to it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I want to name that I'm leaving one album off, and that is Illmatic. So Illmatic probably would be, if I was doing honorable mentions today, Illmatic would be my honorable mention for Introducing Your Kids. That has a lot more questionable content, you know, a lot more violence, you know, a lot more cussing, things like that. But he is just the best. And that album is so perfect front to back. And it's been fun because I don't know if I really properly appreciated Illmatic. I think that everybody always held it up as like the best album, you know, a best rap album of all time. And I just kind of missed it when it was out in the 90s. And I never really got back to it. So it's been fun. One really fun thing is one of the artists that they have latched onto is Nas. And it's forced me to spend a lot of time with his albums. And holy cow, I was missing out. Like, Illmatic is incredible. And it sounds so fresh even now. And I just highly recommend Illmatic as an honorable mention for if your kids are older and you still want to get them into hip hop. Illmatic is a heck of a place to start because he's just hypnotizing to listen to.
You will love this. So I have also not spent very much time with Nas, and you are telling me that I should go back, and I'm very excited to go back and spend more time with him. But I searched Illmatic just to get some context on it while you were talking, and the first search result, you know how Google gets those, like, people also ask, and it gives a bunch of questions. The first one is, why is Illmatic so good? I love the idea that people are Googling that. Why is Illmatic so good?
You know, certainly it's a combination of storytelling and his flow. He's talking about real life that he's experiencing. The songs are really incredible productions and stories. So
speaking of the history of hip hop, Q-Tip was a producer on this and a guest on one of the tracks. So this is directly in that kind of line of sight.
I mean, that's all that New York scene in the 90s, which was super cool. All right. Any other mentions for you before we wrap up?
I mean, I also thought of Tribe Called Quest, I should say, for the one that I would want to introduce to my kids. So I think we were on the same line of thought for that. You know, De La Soul would be another great entry point. I did think about things that just you would think of when you thought of kids hip hop, Fresh Prince, or even Will Smith, some of his later 90s things. And I just couldn't do it. I was like, you can't start with that. It's just that's the hip hop where it feels like there's no natural place to go after that.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's not really hip hop. It's more pop, you know?
It's fun. Yeah, it's pop.
It's fun, but it definitely doesn't feel like
it probably paved the way for, you know, wider America. The word I just used was wider, WIDER, but I could have just as easily used whiter for wider America to be open to all this stuff coming into the mainstream. So,
yeah, 100%.
That was a wild moment in the 90s when everything was kind of happening in real time. I guess one last question before we sign off. Have you spent any time in your life with the Kidz Bop stuff, like Kidz Bop versions of these rap songs or just any Kidz Bop? Have your kids ever been into that? We never did it at all.
Only Kicking and Screaming. Yeah, I mean, they have. Not in a way that has made me very happy. I think that right now, honestly, I think that everyone in this house knows how much I hate Kidz Bop and will not engage with it. I think that they've tried it on me too many times and I've pushed back too many times. But yes, that has happened. I have been inflicted. I should say Kidz Bop has been inflicted upon me in the past. Yes.
I have never spent any time with it. I was always very turned off by it. And we were making a mixtape for a playlist for a PTA event. And I came across, I didn't really understand what Kidz Bop was. I didn't realize that they were like fully changing. Like some of the songs that they had on this Kidz Bop record, I don't think it was stuff like WAP necessarily, but it was pretty close. I was like, how are you making a kids version of this? I didn't understand that you like wholly rewrote lyrics for Kidz Bop songs.
Yes.
That seemed crazy to me.
Yeah, it's fully rewritten. And what's funny to me is that you will see songs on there where it's like WAP, where it's like, why did there need to be a kids version of this? But then also there will be songs that seemed perfectly innocuous on their surface where they'll change like literally one word. And you're like, that's what you had to change. You wanted to make a Kidz Bop version of this and you changed like two words because those were too offensive. This is so stupid. So anyway, don't love it. Don't love it as an experiment. Don't love it. It feels like one of those things where it's just you are more, again, more likely to make your kids interested in the real thing. You know what I mean? Because you had to whitewash it for it. That also feels, again, very
that's right.
Freudian slip.
Well, Caleb, I want to congratulate you and just honor you for not picking Hamilton as your entry point for kids getting into hip hop.
Oh,
I appreciate
God.
Your restraint.
That's my entry point in kids getting into theater.
Okay. Well, we're going to have that episode too this year. All right. What do you listen to this week before we log off?
I've been playing the new Kaliukas in the background a lot lately, and I really like it. I haven't latched on to one song as an entry point. It's kind of just really great as an entire piece of art to me right now. Usually I'll try to like really love an album and I'll take a couple songs that really stand out to me and put it on the best of for the year playlist. And so far I haven't found that with her in this album because it's all just kind of equally good. But I've really liked it so far. Have you listened to it?
Just a couple times, but I actually liked it in full more than her record last year, even though Flowers and some of those songs last year individually, I found them really fun. But this record as a whole, I appreciated and I thought it was a step forward.
Yeah. What are you listening to?
So it's been a while since we've last recorded. And one of the things that has happened since our last recording is that I spent some time on the ocean. And I spent some time listening to Sampha's album On the Ocean. I've been lifted by her love. I fell lifted from above. Lahai, is that the name of the record?
Yeah.
And, you know, as I said in the episode in our best of, that's an album that I just didn't spend any time with during last year. I'm not even sure why, but when you recommended it, I went back to it. And first of all, that would be very high on my year-end list if I was to do it again today. Second of all, what an incredible record and an incredible way to experience that record. Just a blissful piece of music. And you know, Caleb already gave it its flowers, but I just highly recommend anybody who loves anything, any music at all, to check out Sampha's record.
Lahai. I feel like walking along the beach is exactly how he wanted you to experience that.
Well, it was very cold, so we were driving along the beach.
Ah, okay.
More than walking, but that's okay. We would love for you to share this with your friends if you are enjoying it and help us to find a wider audience here as we kick off the year. We have some really fun stuff in store for you over these next few weeks and the next few months. Thanks for joining us. To see you next week.
All right. Good time.